At this time, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, Candy H.
Hi, family. I'm Candy. I'm an addict. And I'm so nervous. Nick just asked me, on a scale of 1 to 10, how nervous are you? I said 10. I started sitting on my hands and feeling with my pockets and got to go to the bathroom and need some ice water or something. You know, and I say, oh, my God. Because it's so easy for me to talk about you, and it's real difficult to talk about me. You know, and I guess God can really take some truth out of me for real. Before the second step, it was the first step for me. And before the first step was my addiction. And before my addiction, it was my inability to handle feelings and emotions. And that's one of the reasons why I use. Before I got here, I am so nervous. Before I got here, I had jobs and I lost jobs. Y'all know how that go. I couldn't understand what was going on, even from a child. I didn't feel like I belonged to the family that I had. I seen a lot of abuse growing up as a kid, and apparently it stuck with me in my mind because I started having to go to therapy at an early age, and my family used to tease me about that. You know, so what happened was when I got old enough to hook school and not go to therapy when I'm supposed to, I started to do just that. You know, I felt that I wanted to be like everybody else, real, real normal. You know, they got problems. That goes on in everybody's household in the project, you know, so it ain't no big deal. But I started turning to drugs at 14 years old, and it made me feel like I was on top of the world for real. I could face anybody, I could beat anybody, I could say anything and do anything, and I liked that feeling. You know, nobody told me I was going to be an addict. Clearly, I didn't know about it anyway. But as I got older, everything escalated, and I ended up here. But when I got here, I remember in 1992, I was sitting in the bathroom with newspaper all over the windows in the house, because I had curtains and sheets up against the windows because I didn't want to know whether it was daytime or nighttime. You know, I didn't even want to go outside anymore. And it had gotten so bad that I would wake up and say, damn, I'm still here? You know? And, you know, I can remember when my daughter was 8 years old, she had a birthday party. I gave her a big birthday party, and she got $8. You know how the parents give the kids $1 for each year? Well, she got $8, and she hid it in her underwears, and I went right in there and took it out. And when she woke up the next morning, I told her I didn't know what happened. So when I got here in 1992, I was really, really, really tired. And I remember calling this place out in Clinton, Maryland, and it was a rehab or counseling clinic or whatever it was. I knew I needed to be there. And I told the lady that I was having problems with my kids because they just don't understand me. And she said, well, do you use drugs? I said, no, sometimes. And still looking across the floor and everything, and, you know, damn near on my knees and stuff like that, you know. And she said, well, you know, we don't know what we can really do for you. I said, okay, well, maybe I'll just try to call somebody else. So she said, okay, we'll do that. And I said, God damn, I ain't going to get no help. So I picked up the phone again, called her back. Said, I'm so sorry, I lied. Yes, I'm getting high. Do this, I do that, and all this kind of stuff, right? She said, well, can you get up here? And where I lived at that time, when I moved there from Palmer Park. So when I moved to Fort Washington, I moved there because everybody in the neighborhood knew I was a crackhead. And I needed to change my social status and change my living arrangements. So I moved to Fort Washington, where the next door neighbor was a little ways away, and I didn't have a car, so I didn't have to worry about people driving up in the driveway. But needless to say, when I was using, I heard everything, you know. So, you know, that was my intentions. I moved there in March, and my intentions was I could get high in peace. Well, in April of that same year, I had surrendered. You know, my thing was I just want some peace and quiet. Give me a peace and I'll be quiet. But because I couldn't talk. You know, I couldn't talk at all. That's my thing was. So I could get high in peace and quiet and ain't nobody going to bother me. But let me tell y'all something. An addict by themselves, it ain't no joke. For real. Because I had newspaper on my windows, like I said. Curtains and blankets and sheets covering everything. The kids did not go to school on a regular basis. I did not get up and be a parent. I did not know how to be a parent. All I knew was shut the fuck up or I kick your ass. That's all I knew. Because mind you, I need other therapy as well. So I don't know how to deal with these smart ass kids who think that I'm their children and they're my parents. You know, and that's real for me. So when I went up there, I used to babysit too, y'all, while I was using. People, kids just love me. You know, they just love me. They tell their parents, why you not hit like Candy? Why you don't do the things Candy do? You know, but and to this day, I still keep a lot of kids. I'm also a foster parent. But people, I used to babysit. But it got so bad that I would tell one of the kids' parents, look, if you don't bring me nothing to my door, the kid's going to be outside. That's the bottom line. They're going to be out there. And so they every day they would have to go and get this and get that and all this kind of stuff. And it just got so crazy. But when I had surrendered, what I did was I had $40. And my mother, Lisa know my mother. My mother's the kind of mother that think everybody's jealous of me. Everybody in the world. They just mad at you. I help you. That kind of thing. So I had called my mother. I said, Mommy, I got to get some help. I'm going to die. She said, well, I thought you said you was going to die if you was in Palmer Park. Now you're in Fort Washington, you still saying you're going to die? I said, yeah, I'm just going to die. She said, well, I'm getting ready to take off work. I'm going to put on 2 weeks leave, and I'm going to take you out of town, and we're going to do this. I said, Mommy, no, I need some help. She said, okay, well, I'm still going to take off work, and I'll come and keep the kids, and whatever you got to do, you got to do it. I said, no. What I did was I said, Mommy, if you come down here and help me, I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to stop. I did happen to have $40 because I was a welfare babysitter, you know. So I had $40 left, and I caught a cab to Piscataway Road, and that was my first introduction to getting clean. You know, I didn't know anything about NA, nothing. I didn't know anything. You know, I heard about people talking about it on TV and stuff, but it didn't apply to me anyway because I was a cut above. You know, I didn't have a problem like you did. And then the people I hung with were less off, they were worse off than me. So if you told me I had a problem, I knew your whole life story and I got some shit to tell you. Like the man that's beating your ass and you lost your place and your kids have gotten taken away from you. I still got my place. I still got my husband, even though he used it. You know, I still got everything, you know. And so those are the people I hung around because I couldn't hang around anybody that I felt had more than me because I couldn't feel superior. You know, I had to feel superior, you know. So I caught a cab out there with all those kids. And the lady said, well, you got to come out here 3 times a week because this is called outpatient. I was like, oh, okay. So I called my mother. I said, well, they want me to come out there 3 times a week. And Medicaid said that we got to call it this time. And they want me to catch some bus. Ain't no buses running down here. I'm just not going to do it. So I missed my 3 appointments. And you know how it is when you go to any psychiatric place or any other place. If you miss 3 appointments, they kick you out. So they kicked me out, but they told me about Narcotics Anonymous, and I said, okay, I'll try that one. My sister, God, she is so sweet. My sister said, well, I'll take the kids. I said, okay. She said, well, do you need a ride? At the time, the place was called the Wim Center. She said, well, do you need a ride up there? I said, no, I'll walk because this is 70 or 80-something block, and that's the 50-something block. It's probably just 2 blocks. It took me 1.5 hours to get there. And we didn't have no sidewalks, and I'm still sweating, and I had a bush. It was a jury curl, supposed to be. And I got to say this, because some people remember the first day I walked into that meeting. And I had a bush. It was supposed to be a jury curl, and I had on a black wool blazer, and it was April 12th. It was black wool blazer, and the pants was red bell bottoms. But bell bottoms wasn't back out yet. So that's what I did. And I said, and I started walking, and the only thing I had in my hand was a Pepsi and this pamphlet called Am I an Addict? And I said, God, this is a long-ass walk, and I'm sweating. I'm still high as hell. Y'all know that. sweat beads pouring everywhere, and I remember where I hid my stuff at, so maybe I just need to turn back around and go in the trash can and get it out, you know, or something, because I'm just confused, you know? And I'm still walking, and I get this pamphlet, and I open it up, and it says, these questions had yes or no. But see, as smart as I am, I needed something that said sometimes or hardly ever. That's what I need. It didn't have that. It just had simple yes or no. And I was devastated. Because nobody's walking up this road but me. And this is my first chance of really being honest with myself. Nobody's walking up here but me. And it had all kinds of stuff. And I was like, damn, yeah. Yeah, you know. I said, maybe I should turn around. They asking too much of my business. I don't need this. All this is going on en route to this Williams Center. The only question I didn't know was the answer to, because like I said, I'm real, real smart. The only question I didn't have that I didn't have the answer to was, have you ever had indefinable fears? I didn't know what that meant until I kept coming back, and I was here long enough, and I remembered that I used to be laying down in the bed, and I used to think that I was a corpse. And everybody was looking over me and saying Candy was all right, but she was on that shit. You know, that's the only thing I could see. I could see people, kids crying because everybody, kids love me. But I could see, you know, my family acting, you know, real ill about me going. But for real, those were the fears that I had. Death, the police, you know, I would use and get my kids pizza and shit and use and turn off all the lights and tell them go to hell to bed. And it's 4:30 in the afternoon. You know, or make them go outside because I hear something and your ass better go out there and around the back and see what it is. You know? And they did that. And they did those things. And that was my insanity. You know, that was just sheer insanity. And I'm going to tell you something. When you got children that have lived through your addiction, I wasn't fortunate to have babies that didn't understand. You know, I had kids that were growner than me, because my daughter used to have to bring me food and bring me breakfast and send my son to school pissy and mismatch socks and all that shit. So now I want her to be my little girl, and she just got a hard time with that shit, you know. And she has to recover in her own way, you know. At first I was like, oh my God, I would call my sponsors like, I'm gonna kill this bitch, you know, and that's how I felt. You know, and some of my friends would hear me on the phone like, bitch, I will kill you, because I did not know how to be a parent, you know, and she surely did not know how to be my daughter, you know, and my son is the kind of little boy that don't care. He don't care as long as his mommy around. He really don't care. But now he's learning how to be outspoken as a direct result of hanging with his sister. You know what I'm saying? You know, get over no more on him. He's starting to know a little bit of faith. You know, I suffer from another illness called depression. And I'm a doctor, y'all know that, right? I take myself off of medication when I feel like I should. I put myself on medication when I feel like I should. I'll take the medication or go to the doctor and get the prescription and leave it in the drawer, and then I proceed to act real crazy, you know, in recovery. You know, I mentioned about the insanity before I got here. And now I'm going to share about some insanity that happens when you're here. You know, shit that people don't really want to talk about. You know, as a direct result of me still not wanting to deal with my feelings and emotions, I did a lot of things. The only thing I didn't do was use. And that alone is a miracle. You know, because today I got powers greater than me, like my sponsors, you know, my networks, and my sponsor turned me on to somebody that calls me every morning now and say, it's medicine time. I'm like, shit. I see her name on the call ID, and I be like, I ain't answering it. I ain't answering it. Because when I call her, I'm going to tell her, I took my medication today. You know, but you know, I wanted to be so normal, y'all, like my friends. I got real smart friends and, you know, real intelligent friends, and I didn't think any addict could suffer from depression and have to take medication. You know, mind you, I'm very smart, so, you know, y'all just don't appear to be that way to me. So I wanted to be like them, you know, and I didn't want to, and you know, one day, I got to say this, because one day Lisa came over my house and I had no furniture. I threw everything out. I threw everything out, the kids' beds and some more shit. and told them, oh, don't worry, we'll get it. And the kids were like, Mom, we're supposed to have a sleepover. What's going on? God damn it, sleep over their house. I'm tired of everybody kids coming over here. You know, get some blankets and shit. Lay on the floor. But what had happened was so many things was going on. Like my marriage was just dead. You know, I got married in my addiction because I wanted to change my social status. Everybody was teasing the kids. So I got to go get married. So I was married now. Okay? And, but we came home and got hot. You know, we did what newlyweds did in our time. And that was get hot. That's what we did. And we fought. And we fought and we fought and we got high and we fought. And that was some sick shit. You know, but my marriage was on the rocks, and I didn't want to tell y'all that my husband was still using, and I don't want to get high, you know. And it got so bad that my stomach was flipping. I remember calling Donna one night real late, and that lady talked to me all night long, and I don't even know if she remembered it, but I do, you know. And I kept saying, he got to go because my stomach is hurting, you know. But see, insanity is repeating the same thing and expecting something different, okay. So I told y'all how I called her, and I was crying that he got to go. But y'all, he went and got some help for 2 months, and he come on back. He well now, okay? But I woke up and don't have no money, can't get to work, and all that good stuff one more time. And this went on from 1992 to 1997, okay? This is how long that went on, because we have a child, you know, and I believe that women should stay with their husbands and stuff if they got kids. And they can have extramarital affairs if that's what they want to do, you know, because that's the shit I did, you know. But what happened was I realized that, for one thing, I didn't like to be by myself. That was number one. So if you came at me, any way you came at me was all right with me at that particular time. So it wasn't until 1997 that I decided that I can't do this no more. And when my sponsor said, you're going to fuck around and use, only thing I could do was cry, because that was the first time on the inside I felt the truth, you know, because I could tell people, I'm not going to get back with him. Girl, I'm serious. I'm serious. I'm not going to get back with him. You know, I'm serious. This is it this time. I'm serious. This is it. They'd be like, okay. But the kind of friends that I got, they love me no matter what, you know. See, and I got to talk about that because they love me through it and rejoice with me in it. That's it, and that's all, you know. And I will always say, this is it. I'm not going to do it no more. And da-da-da-da-da. And he go to jail. Because I like to tell y'all treatment. But he'll go to jail and stay for 2 years and come back out all built, shit all in place. And I'm like, oh, God, hormones jumping. I got to go. But see, what I do is I don't visit his ass. I move him back in. And the kids be fussing and going crazy. I'm like, well, what is the problem? It's not like he's a stranger. We've been together for 15 years. Y'all need to just stay in y'all place. Kids need to be seen and not heard. Well, when I wake up and don't have a car and we ain't got no money and can't go grocery shopping, those kids are not only seen, they are heard. Yeah. You know, and I've had enough of the badgering, so I had to stop. And what I did was I took a few months to just stop and wonder why. What's going on? Number one is, like I said, I couldn't deal with my feelings and emotions, so I wasn't taking no medication. I wasn't seeing no therapy. I wasn't getting to the root of some shit. You know, I wasn't realizing that, you know, I've seen this kind of behavior growing up, and it was all right with the people that came around before me in my family, and I thought that it would be all right with me. You know, I didn't know that I could be the one that break that cycle, you know. And in recovery, I had this affair one time in recovery, and I found out that the people kind of cheated on me. Yeah, they cheated on me. And I went up in that meeting, and I said, there she is. I never seen the lady a day in my life, but for some reason I knew that was her. Just like the women that my husband used to mess with. Y'all, you could just tell who they are, you know? But, I said, there she is. And the person got up and hauled ass out the meeting. But not me. I stayed there, and the person happened to have been a newcomer, and they didn't have a ride home and everything. And I said, I'll take you home, because they say they're not going to take you home. They left, as you can see, so I'll take you home. I took the lady home and went up to her house and saw how she was living and all this kind of stuff. I said, oh, my God. Oh, Lord, have mercy. And it was steady telling us to feed the sister all this stuff. And, you know, women, We need women. And we the same ones that will kill each other. For real. We will kill each other. Because I went over there and I put all this shit in that girl's head and that girl went right back out. Went right back out. But that didn't stop me from messing with the person who cheated on me. You know, because I'm like this. If you're in my way, I got to remove you. You know, I have to remove you. And for real, that's not the way to live. That's not the way to live. Now, I'm going to tell you something. To practice that kind of insanity from breaking past codes to pages, because I'm good with that shit. I told you I was smart. You know, I break the passcode with the pages, and I heard the sister saying, oh, it was good last night, blah, blah, blah. What? Oh, no, it's on. You know, but I took all that adrenaline, y'all, and I felt just like I got high. When it was all over, the sister was out there using again, I felt like I had got high. And I still wasn't ready to do no work. You know, and when the literature say, do you believe that it would be insane to walk up to somebody and say, may I please have a fatal accident or a heart attack and die? If you believe that this is an insane thing to do, then you should have no problem with the second step. Well, see, I had no problem admitting that I was sick, but we got a problem when we were to talk about my mental state. You know, because I don't have a problem there. You know, I could solve all my problems by myself. You know, and there was a whole lot of days in recovery that I felt like I had to get high. Because I didn't want to tell y'all my business. And when you have a sponsor and you only use that sponsor in name, you ain't doing shit but hurting yourself. That's what you're doing, you know, because we need direction. And when my sponsor would come to me and tell me things, first of all, I thought she was God. Y'all need to know that. That was my high power. And when she cracked the whip, I'm like, oh, my God, you know, she ain't supposed to do this. But what it was, I thought she had all the answers. And she was supposed to answer every one of my requests and all of my needs. And then something hit me last year. Yeah, last year, that she's not God. She's an addict trying to stay clean just like me. And then I started looking at her a little bit different, you know, because I had the same sponsor since I was 10 days into this program. You know, mind you, I don't pay her shit. And I fired her 1,000 times behind her back. You know, never the courage in her face. Because she the kind of to tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. I used to go to the men to get what I wanted to hear. You know, because y'all women, y'all tell me shit I need to hear, and I ain't trying to hear it. You know, and you got to take it or leave it. But when she tell you what you need to hear, and she'll cap it up with, oh, I love you madly. I'm like, how the hell does she love me? Don't she know I'm going through some things? You know, but yeah, like I said, we women, we'll fuck around and we kill each other in here. You know, we always badgering one another, you know, and I'm good with that. You know, because I would sit here and say any and everything about you just so I won't have to look at me. You know, but my real help started coming when I started using my sponsor. You know, calling her and getting some direction. And regardless of everything she say I might not agree with, but you better know it's stored because I got to go back to it. You know, and that's a power greater than myself. You know, because I used to think that I had all the answers. And I wasn't open to a whole lot of other things people had to say to me. If you ain't saying and sanctioning my stuff, you really ain't got a whole lot to say to me. You know, my friends are supposed to do as I say, you know, and everything. And I had conditional friendships and stuff like that, you know. Today I've had friends that I've had for 5 years, 6 years and stuff like that, you know. And for me, that's a miracle, you know, because, like I said, I had to be with people who were less fortunate me than I was so that I could be feeling like I was above, you know. And today I don't have to do that. Pat, I did take my medicine today, too. But I'm still nervous. But that's enough out of me because Nicholas is here. And thanks for letting me share.
All right. Now I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Nicholas M.
My name is Nicholas, and I'm a recovering addict. One of the things that I was thinking about when I was sitting there was how much alike we all are and how different we feel that we are. And that's something that has been one of my greatest educations since I've been in recovery. When I came into this program, I thought I was the only Hispanic that left his home. I thought that I was the only person that people didn't understand. I thought also that I was smart. And I couldn't understand why the world and I were just not clicking. And I thought I was all right. I really did. The fact was that before I came into these rooms, I also had my room pretty dark. I slept on the floor of my apartment because I didn't have a bed. I had a mattress for my couch. And all I could do at that point in my life was just make it to work. But I thought I was all right. Before I came into the program, the last my last time that I used, actually my second to last time that I used, I was walking home, and it was late. I had used. I walked across the street and picked a fight with three bikers. Now, I was thinking, why did anybody pick me to chair on this step? And the obvious answer is because I think I'm qualified to speak on it, just a hair. When I did that, the person that I was going to have this confrontation with, and mind you, when I went over there, I wasn't going to pick a fight. I went over there to find out why they were making this racket at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, just because I was curious. And the guy that I did that with spat on my face. I had a knife in my hand, and by grace, I didn't cut anybody. And by grace, I'm here talking. Because I actually turned around, and being how I am, I said, "You regret you ever did that." And I was on my way home. And when I got home, I was getting ready to get my bow and arrow because I like hunting. I was going to go back there and get me a biker. Of course, once again, as we're talking about this insanity, there's not much insanity behind any of this behavior. I was all right. I didn't do it. I went over to a friend's house the following night, and as I was in her living room, I said, you know, I'm beginning to lose it a little bit, my behavior. And, of course, I was saying this as I was using. And this person said, I think you need to go to NA. I said, what is that? Because I don't know. She said, well, that's a place where people go that have problems with drugs. And I said, well, I don't know about that. I don't think I have a problem, but I definitely am making some stupid moves, and maybe I should go. So I went to my first meeting. And when I got out of the car and I was walking towards that church, I felt real bad. And the thought that I had in my mind at that time was, boy, you have really, really blown it. Because to be honest, I didn't have any more answers. See, up until then, I had answers. Up until then, I thought I was all right. And as long as I was all right and I had answers, I could keep going. But at that time, I had run out of answers. And I walked into my first meeting, and I didn't hear anything that anybody said. And I didn't feel like I was a recovering addict or an addict. But I got invited to go to get some coffee that night. And I thought, boy, isn't this nice? I'm getting invited somewhere. I hadn't been invited anywhere for a long time. And I went with these people, and they were nice. And they said, come back. Come back tomorrow night. There's a meeting over here. Why don't you come? I went to that meeting. And after a while, I started to realize that maybe, just maybe, I really needed to stop using drugs. It was a good idea at the time. And I wasn't really sold on it, but I was willing to give it a shot. I remember it was in the wintertime, and it was coming on New Year's, and I was laying in the tub getting ready to go to an NA dance. And I was laying in that tub, and I was thinking, you know, the only good thing I can say about me today is that I haven't used for, I think at that time was maybe a couple months. That was the only thing. But I liked the idea that I could at least say something good, because I hadn't said anything good about myself for quite a while. Went to the dance. Didn't like the dance because I couldn't get into the groove, you know. I couldn't dance. Didn't know how to dance without having a buzz. You know, just didn't know how to do that. Didn't know. And I was watching everybody having a good time, and I'm looking at these people like, these are some sick folks. But I left that night. It was a full moon. And I looked up there, and it was cold. And you know what? I wanted to use real bad. But by once again grace, I went home. I was fortunate enough to be here last night when they were getting ready to start to take the new banner that we have for this convention. And they were showing the convention banners for previous years. And they had the first year. And they said, more will be revealed. I was fortunate enough to be at that convention. That was my first NA convention. And I remember how I felt driving up here, because we were driving, it was in Annapolis. And I drove up there with my sponsor. Toxic, very toxic. I drove up here for this convention, once again, with my sponsor. The good news is, not quite as toxic. The bad news is there's a lot of white hairs growing in places that they were never there before. For those people that are kind of new in recovery and want that clean time, it comes at a price. Body isn't what it used to be, you know. The good news is the mind is getting slightly better. Part of the reason for that is that one day at a time, I haven't had to use. The reason for that is because I've gone to a lot of meetings. I have had sponsors. And much like yourself, I've been through a few. I've been through about three. And I ended up taking the one that I started out with back. And I'm sure that he's been real thrilled all these years that I did that. But I've paid him back with a lot of amusement. Because for those of you that are sponsors, you know that the people that we sponsor can amuse the hell out of us. One of the things that we really don't talk about that much in recovery, you know, I've had days that I've been sitting in my apartment feeling pretty bummed out of what a day I've kind of had, and I've had one of the people I've sponsored call me up, and after I finished talking to this person, I have felt great. Damn grateful. Damn grateful. This convention, the banner talks about spiritually refreshed. And I'm beginning to feel some of that. And it's a wonderful thing. When I was asked to speak on this convention, at this convention, I actually had to get real and go back and do my little homework again, you know? Kind of thing that after, you know, some years, you start getting complacent about, like, well, shoot, I've been clean X amount of years, and, you know, But I had to go back and try to get a grip a little bit again on this second step just to see how I felt about it. One of the things that I understand today is that every year recovery, as we revisit these steps, as I have revisited these steps, what they mean to me changes. When I came into the program and I worked the second step with my sponsor, I remember that all I wanted to do, I was like in the step race. You know, because early in recovery, especially the area and the people I hang around with, you know, you go to a meeting and it was like, well, what step are you working? Well, I'm on the first, but I'm going to my second soon. So what happened was I wanted to be recovered, really. And I wanted to let you guys know how it felt like, you know. So when I got to the second step, my sponsor asked me to write a list of the drugs that I had used and how they had, what kind of effect they had had on me. And I did that, you know, because I was one of those people that I was willing to, you know, do whatever the hell they said around here because I wanted to get it. So in that sense, I was more than willing. There was a lot of things suggested of me when I first came into these rooms, you know, especially by my sponsor. I had a real hard sponsor at that time. He said, I want you to go to 3-step meetings a week. I want you to call me every day. And, you know, I didn't particularly like this guy. So what I would do would be sometimes I would call him, but I make sure I call him when he wasn't home. And he would say, what happened? Did you call? And I say, oh, of course, yeah, I called, but you weren't there. And then I'd be thinking to myself, I got you. You know? This sponsor's name was George. It's George. And I love this guy today because he helped me stay clean through that period and that insanity. Because I needed some direction. And I had never had direction. See, that was part of the problem. That I was the person that was leading my life. And at that time, I was not equipped. But I thought I was because I was all right. So I worked that step and worked all the other steps. And I had 5 years in recovery. And I was hunting. And I was up in a deer stand, and for you people that know anything about it, I was just sitting up in a tree waiting for some stupid deer to go by so that I could, like, shoot it with my bow. 5 years clean, involved in area service, had people that I was sponsoring, had gotten fairly far in the steps at this time. I wasn't sure where I was, but I think I was, you know, up there. And I felt like shit. I felt terrible. I was depressed. And I could not understand it. Because, man, I was going to meetings. You know, I had sponsors still. I had people that I was sponsoring. I mean, my program, I thought, was tight. And I was a sick pup. And as I was sitting on that deer stand, I wanted to take my safety strap, wrap it around my neck, and ease down with 5 years clean. So if there's any of you coming on to that time period, listen up. I decided that what I needed to do was I needed to get real about that power greater than myself thing. Because, see, up until that time, I was acting as if. See, it talks about it in the literature. You know, that literature says, you know, until you get this thing, act as if. Well, I was doing too damn much acting. So so I went and proceeded on a quest for what was my spiritual belief system and how that power greater than myself was going to restore me to sanity. Before I came to lead this meeting, I looked up a few words in the dictionary. I looked up sanity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it says help of mine. And I looked up power, and you know, there was a long definition of power. But what really stuck with me was really the ability to create change. And I needed to create change soon at that time in my life. And at that time, I became willing. These steps are all set up in a pattern, and they are, to me, a layman's way of trying to become a better person. Because at least it gives some kind of direction. And so has my sponsor. So has going to a lot of step meetings. So has sitting up at night talking to people. So has having a sponsor that I could talk about my life and not keep any trash.
Mm-hmm.
And all that has helped me to work on my sanity, my health of mind. I can honestly tell you today that a larger portion of the decisions that I make are more out of health of mind than they are out of sanity. And I also want to let you know that there is a part of me that will be always carried with me that likes being insane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a little part of me that says, let's get crazy. Let's start some shit. And see, where I'm one of those, you know, there's different kind of addicts, you know, and I consider myself, much like yourself, an intellectual addict.
Mm-hmm.
So see, I don't want to create this shit where I am on the spotlight.
Uh-huh.
I want to be in the behind the scenes. Okay? I want to be behind the scenes so then I can step back and watch the insanity going on and go, God damn, you believe that? Good work. Look at the way those people are carrying on.
Microphone one at a time. Also try to keep in mind that there are other addicts who are waiting to share. If you don't want to be recorded, please inform the person taping so that they can turn the recorder off while you're sharing. The meeting's still going on.
Thank you.
Hi everybody, I'm Kimmel. I'm an addict. I feel real grateful and real blessed to be here. You know, there's a lot of tragedy going on. I'm from Pittsburgh, and there's a lot of tragedy going on in my family. But I was in a meeting last night, and they were saying, what about the slogans? What's your favorite slogan? And we were kind of tired, so I really didn't get a chance to share, but my favorite slogan is, no matter what, don't take the first one. You know, because I'm not used to dealing with feelings and emotions and living life on life's terms. Through the grace of God, if I stay clean one day at a time, I'll have my hearing next month.
All right, good.
big accomplishment for me. I was very blessed to have loving family that helped take care of my kids and always enabled me in my addiction. I kept picking up 24-hour keypads, but I would never stay clean for a long period of time. And I'm real grateful for that because I got tired of doing that. I wanted to learn how to stay stopped. But that saying, don't use no matter what, oh, wow, that really helped me. And after I got through some things, I knew I didn't have to use no matter what. I was having using dreams the last couple of weeks. The cravings was coming, and I didn't know why they was coming. Because my disease was trying to steal my joy. About a couple months ago, I wrote off the second step with my sponsor. And ever since I wrote that second step out, I haven't been doing no changing. I've just been staying clean. And the first few months of my recovery, I've been meeting after meeting. And God blessed me to be able to go to school. And I'm taking care of my kids. And I ain't using one day at a time, and I'm praying. And then all of a sudden, I don't have a disease. You know, my disease told me I didn't have a disease. I didn't need to go to meetings. But lately, I've been feeling real messed up in the inside because I don't know how to live life on life's terms, and all these feelings have been coming. My brother's 21. He's shot, and he's paralyzed, and he refused to testify. And I haven't had him for 4 years. And we were going out partying and doing all these things together. And he was due to go to rehab and get rehabilitated, and then his mind went. He got an infection around his brain. Before I came up here, I went to see him, and he's laying there, and he don't know who I am. His body is deteriorated. And I really didn't want to deal with them feelings. I wanted to die to see my baby brother laying up here like that. So I had to find some gratitude. And we had a lot of deaths in our family lately. Had to find some gratitude. For 9 years, my God kept me, and I'm clean today. And I need to stay clean for me and for my kids and for me to be able to help my brother. You know, and I need to do some work because my disease is trying to kill me. It really is. And it was just a blessing to be able to ride up here and be at this convention and stay clean no matter what. Because when I got a craving, I used. When shit happened in my family, I used. I got angry, I used. You hurt my feelings, I used. I didn't know how to stop. And now my disease wants me to use again. Because it wants to steal my joy. I got one brother. He's in jail on trial for murder. My other brother just got shot and paralyzed. And my sister, she runs off and leaves her kids everywhere. You know, and I'm the oldest, and I'm the only one my mother ain't got to worry about for a change. And I was like, damn, if I use, my mother is really going to be messed up. Because she's going to have to run to the hospital, take care of my brother. My sister going to be leaving her kids on her. And she's going to have to take care of my kids. That was too much for my mother to bear. And for the first time, I was selfless. And that feels real good. So I'm like real ready to do some work when I get back. You know, it's either I change or I'm going to die. And that's being restored to sanity. That's how people stay clean. And that's how I've been staying clean one day at a time for these 11 months. And my disease don't like that. And I talked to my disease. I said, I ain't using. Fuck you. I am not using. I have to tell my disease that. I like to thank y'all for listening, and I'm happy to be here.
I'm an addict. My name's Jerry. I want to thank God for everything. And sharing my experience on the second step by listening to the first two speakers. I was kind of moved to share that a part of my restorement plan is due to my acceptability to my delusions. And if you listen to me, I'm going to kind of like break it down, because for a long time, after being in here 6 years, not knowing that my thinking was still insane due to my self-centeredness. I know for me that the delusions is formed against what I think and feel about me due to my low self-esteem. Being restored means that I must look at the reality that I never was ever able to accept, because I have always been trapped in my delusions. What it means is that everything that's centered around me is only the way I see it. See, I'm psychotic when I use narcotics.
Okay,
see, the reality is for me is I can't think but one way. And if you ain't a part of what I'm thinking, then I'm out of your way. But one of the biggest forms of delusions I always suffer with that I'm conscious of today is you people as being addicts, because I know we are more alike than different. See, my history, if a man wasn't talking or moving as fast as I was, then he was always vulnerable when he came across my path. See, what I know is this also. I'm an addict, man, that's full of greed.
All right, man.
I don't want one shot, I want all shots. And as long as I'm standing, I believe I'm all right. But that's the delusion. See, this disease, the sister said it, this disease not only wants my life, it wants any and everything that it attacks. It's vicious. See, another thing that I learned since being here is I can't sponsor me. See, the reality, listen to me, y'all. See, because we stay as sick as we want to be in here. You know, and this ain't about blaming anybody. What I found out was this. See, I got 100 forms of inadequacies about myself due to low self-esteem. See, I can fix this outside up because all my life I've been chasing a false sense of identity. But guess what's real painful? When you know in your heart how you really feel about yourself within, and you still project due to your lack of ability to accept you just the way you are suffering in a delusion. Thank you for letting me share.
I'd like to thank those that shared, and we have just for today. I'm a grateful recovering addict named Donna. Hi. Just for today. Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective for my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So as long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear. Just for today.
You did good, baby.
Can we have a moment of silence followed by a serenity prayer? Oh, locking up. Okay. All right, all locked up. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Keep coming back.
Work.
Candy, come outside so you can get a picture with the song.
I don't have stuff in the Congratulations.
Thank you.